Rather than agriculture, he favors industrial development. And in fact, his famous report on manufacturers is a blueprint for industrial development of the early American political culture. And while Hamilton did not have quite as distinguished a career as Jefferson, his accomplishments were not insignificant. Like Jefferson, he was an absolutely brilliant student, not nearly as broadly read as Jefferson, but a much deeper and perhaps more intensive reader than Jefferson. Where Jefferson had graduated William and Mary in 2 years, it took Alexander Hamilton about 6 months to get through King's College, later renamed Columbia. Again, it took Jefferson 5 years to complete his legal studies. Hamilton does it in 6 months and emerges as the premier lawyer in New York and one of the greatest legal minds that America had at the time. Whereas Jefferson is a partisan of the French Enlightenment and of the Scottish realists, Hamilton is a fan of Hume. He's an intense student of Hume and his skepticism. And that's one of the sources of his incredible partisanship for commerce over agriculture. And of course, Hamilton was a moving force behind the constitutional movement. He was, in fact, one of the principal authors of the Federalist Papers. So we can't imagine a starker contrast between, on the one hand, a country pastoral gentleman, and on the other, a New York City slicker, a commercial cosmopolitan. Well, in Jefferson's mind, Hamilton is an engine of political corruption. He recalls to Benjamin Rush a scene that occurred in the very beginning of Washington's administration. Washington called everyone in his administration together, including the vice president, John Adams, and they sat down to dinner at Jefferson's residence. And I quote, "After dinner, sitting at our wine, having settled our question, other conversation came on, in which a collision of opinion arose between Mr. Adams and Colonel Hamilton on the merits of the British Constitution. Mr. Adams giving it as his opinion that if some of its defects and abuses were corrected, it would be the most perfect constitution of government ever devised by man. Hamilton, on the contrary, asserted that with its existing vices, it was the most perfect model of government that could be formed, and that the correction of its vices would render it an impracticable government." Well, for Jefferson, this is a sign of a man that is fundamentally corrupt to the bone. But we have to understand, Hamilton is drawing this doctrine from Hume, who argues that what people call corruption, which is to say partisan influence and patronage, is in fact the oil that greases the machinery of government. Well, there's another story he tells on the same evening. He notes that Jefferson always had with him a collection of portraits of his Trinity, and the room being hung with a collection of these portraits. Among them were those of Bacon, Newton, and Locke. Hamilton asked me who they were. I told him they were my Trinity of the three greatest men the world had ever produced, naming them. He paused for some time. "The greatest man," said he, "that ever lived was Julius Caesar." And this is Jefferson's understanding of Hamilton, that he's essentially a Caesar. We're going to return to that quote in the next lecture, because in fact Jefferson completely misread Hamilton's claim or his point. But what's important at this point is to see how Jefferson understood Hamilton. And he sums it up. He was honest as a man, but as a politician, believing in the necessity of either force or corruption to govern men. Well, let's turn to some of the specific differences between Jefferson and Hamilton. And first, let's look at the difference in their conception of the Constitution and proper role of government. And the central issue is the nature of government. Hamilton sees the federal government as a national compact, while Jefferson sees it as an agreement between the states, thus essentially confederational. Let's look at Hamilton's nationalism. The distinguished historian Eric McKittrick has noted that most nationalists, in fact, came from military service in the revolutionary cause. And there's a good reason for that. Serving in the Continental Army was one of the few experiences that brought people together from different parts of the country and different regions and bonded them in the face of danger.